Hi everyone, welcome to the Ether Real Project. My name is Katie Sloan and I'm super excited to be bringing this podcast to you. Over the next few weeks, we're going to have some really amazing guests who are telling their stories of how they have transformed their lives through the power of positive thought and incorporating metaphysical practices into their life. We will be discussing all of those subjects that people love to hear about but don't necessarily want to talk about. We'll be talking about angels, near-death experiences, meditation, organized religion, sacred geometry, energy vortexes, the law of attraction, the list goes on. The most important thing we're going to be addressing is mental health and how we can really work with the metaphysical and the etheric realms to balance our mind, body, and soul. Welcome back to the Ether Real Project. Today I am joined by Sarah Busby, who is my sister and also a Reiki master. Sarah and I did our training together, how many years ago?
2012 we started, I think, wasn't it?
Yes. So what's that? Seven years ago. Yeah. 10 out of 10 there for our maths. we trained together and it's been quite a journey. And I'm very excited to have Sarah with me today. Firstly, she doesn't come to LA very often, usually once a year.
Yes.
And secondly, I'm very excited for you to hear Sarah's story, because it's definitely unique, shall we say.
Yes.
So Sarah, I just want to give you a little backstory. Sarah was, and wait, do you say you were an alcoholic or you are an alcoholic?
Well, I think you're supposed to say you are an alcoholic, but I don't know, really. I say I'm an alcoholic because I quite like to look at people's reactions when I say it. but I suppose I'm an alcoholic in recovery.
Right, okay.
I would say, rather than an active alcoholic.
Okay, and I just want to add that, tell us how long you have actually been sober now.
Well, I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly, but it will be 3 years on the 2nd of November.
Wow.
So not far off 3 years now.
Which is honestly amazing. Yeah. And I know, like, because we are big believers in, like, our word is our wand, and we're not to say it's really hard, but goodness me, what is the percentage of people that actually do that?
Well, I think it is less than 1%, I think.
Wow.
It's something like anyone in addiction, 30% will seek help, and 30% of that may, of those people, will do it. But I don't even think it's as big as that. It's not very many anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I know, it's so sad. And that is why I think it's so important for your story to be heard. Like, how have you done this? Like, I know how you've done it and I'm just so excited for you to share it with people. But before we go into that, I want you to tell your story. Obviously, there's a lot more to it, but just kind of summarize, like, when you got to your lowest point, when was that, and what happened? It's quite emotional because I know the whole story and I was kind of living it from here, being so far away, feeling very helpless. But ultimately, I know that it was only you that could do it, and you did do it, and you have done it, and it's amazing.
It got extreme though, unfortunately, and I wish it hadn't got, it had to get that extreme for me, but it's so sad because that really was Russian roulette. I was dicing with death, and I was very, very lucky.
Very.
Unfortunately, people, you can't let it get that bad because a lot don't make it.
Yeah.
But I was lucky. Now, I don't even know when the lowest point was. I mean, I realise now when I look back that I was always probably an alcoholic. There's different levels, I suppose, and when I look back from the minute I had it, started drinking at 14, I just loved it. You know, I just loved drinking. I called it the vodka buzz. It was a problem, really, but I didn't realise it was a problem because everybody else was doing it. I was young, it was, we were partying, it was disguised really. But I've always, it's only now that I realise that I suppose I'd work my life around when I'd next have a drink, but I was highly functioning. It wasn't a problem in that respect. So it wasn't really seen as a problem. Everyone just thought I really liked to drink, you know, and that was it.
And I think that is important to address, because I'm pretty sure, I mean, the percentage of functioning alcoholics that probably don't even know they're functioning alcoholics is extremely high.
Well, you don't like to think you are. You like to think, oh, well, I'm not as bad as, you know, as bad as other people. So, but yeah, I mean, there is so many, and it's so acceptable, especially in England, in our culture over there. It's odd if you don't drink, you know.
Yeah.
It's so readily available 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the in thing to do, but yeah.
I mean, there's literally a pub on every corner
England. Yeah. And there's garages that have 24-hour licenses. You've got access to it 24/7.
Yeah, there's like apps now where you can have it delivered 24/7.
On Amazon, you know, you can get it. It's absolutely no problem, and it's glorified even.
Yeah.
It's the biggest killer. It's really, really sad.
It really is, yeah.
It destroys lives and the families of people in addiction as well.
Yeah.
As much as the person in the addiction.
Yeah.
Just wreaks devastation.
Yeah, and it did for several years for you and for us as a family.
I don't know when I really crossed the line, because it is an invisible line, so you don't actually know when you cross it. I would say it started getting out of hand in 2013, but it was possibly even slightly before that. And then it just escalated, and then you get to the point where you're physically dependent. And once you're physically dependent, you're just drinking around the clock so that you don't have seizure and, you know, you're in that much of a panic without it.
So you would say you went from maybe being like a binge drinker who liked to party and you saved it for the weekend, and then did it creep into just...
I didn't save it for the weekend. I would drink most nights anyway.
Wow.
But heart, I was quite, what would you call it? Like... I was quite controlled with it. I'd get me half bottle of vodka. I'd have me half bottle of vodka most nights.
Right.
Just to do mundane things like the ironing. Everything seemed a little bit more fun when I'd had half a bottle of vodka. I think I put too much pressure on myself that everything had to be done. Now I would just think, well, now I just don't do ironing.
I don't do ironing either. Mum really is not happy with us. Like, she's done something wrong raising us. We do not do ironing.
I think I found life a little bit mundane, and so I just, you know, half a bottle of vodka later and it was all great.
And I think that is like the root cause of a lot of the problem, is that we're all trying to fill this void.
Well, yeah, and
what do we fill it with?
Vodka makes it sound extreme, but it's so common with everybody thinks, oh, I have a couple of glasses of wine, like that's really sophisticated and acceptable. It's just the same thing. And
yeah,
there's so many people that do that.
Yes, and then become reliant upon it.
Yeah.
That's it. And there's Eckhart Tolle, who's obviously, he's very kind of high up in the spiritual world and does a lot of talking on mindfulness. And he says about alcohol and how really, you know, it should be like a meal. If we're going to have one, are we enjoying it like a meal, and are we being mindful, or are we just drinking to get the next drink down us? Because then that's when it's not it's not for the greatest good.
I was definitely drinking to get the next drink down me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it crept in and you became physically dependent upon it.
Yeah. I didn't even realise that could happen. I didn't even know that could happen. I mean, obviously I was shaking, and in work, I know a couple of people had made jokes about me shaking and me thinking, oh gosh, this isn't right. I didn't realise. And then when you and Mum got together, and because you'd realised it had become more than a problem,
yeah,
and I got took off to the alcohol clinic,
mm-hmm,
that was when it was pointed out to us really that, oh right, you've got it's withdrawals, and it's actually dangerous to just stop, because you get the seizures and all that, which I didn't realise. So then you have to go onto a reduction plan,
yeah,
where you reduce, and that didn't work out for me, because trying to reduce by one unit of alcohol when you've already had 25 units, because you've got to have a certain amount, so you don't, oh, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, I remember that, you know, it was, I don't know what year it was,
that was
but Christmas.
It was just after Christmas, it was the January of 2015.
Yeah, and I arranged an intervention, which, to be honest, I didn't want to do, but I just honestly felt like this was a life or death situation. And I also felt like everybody didn't realise that it was a life or death situation.
Yeah, because I was very good at hiding it.
Yeah, yeah. And even then, I think everybody thought it was a bit dramatic that we were, like, arranging this intervention. But I just knew that that you weren't good and things weren't going to be good. And even after that, when we thought you were at, like, your worst or lowest point,
that was just the beginning,
wasn't it? So just to summarise what happened then, like, maybe over the next 2 years since, from the intervention, it just went...
Just went from bad to worse. I was trying to get off it, but I was just so low and so negative and filled full of negative energy. And I knew what I had to be, what I should be doing, because shortly before it all became a problem, when we started the Reiki, really, we learnt more about the law of attraction and things like that. We just started by reading The Secret. And so I knew the laws and I knew how to apply them, but I didn't have it in me to actually do it.
Yeah. And now knowing what we know about energy and vibration, alcohol is literally low vibration energy that you're putting in your body if we analyse it as energy. So
it's
to try and raise your vibration and be positive after having drink is so hard, because you're working just to get back to the point to where you were before you had that drink.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually recently learned, I don't know how they gauge this, that when you have a couple of drinks, it does affect your energy, and it takes you 10 days to then get back to the point, the energy point that you were at before you had the drink.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how much it affects us.
Yeah, and I was drinking over a bottle of vodka a day.
Wow.
Easily.
And that led to seizures.
Started having seizures and everything, and then we realised that the reduction plan wasn't working for me. I went to my GP and had a couple of courses of Librium, which is a drug that can wean you off it, so you can stop drinking, but it's not good for you. But he kindly gave me that. But of course, it just, as with every, I'm yet to meet an alcoholic, because I'm in the circles now, and I know a lot of people. You know, this is not rare at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very common. The minute you've been off it for a week, you think you're fixed.
Right.
So you think, you know, your brain's telling you, well, I'm all right now. I can just go back to how I used to be. I can just have a few drinks. And time again, this is what I always thought. And time again, it just escalated and I ended up worse than before.
Yeah.
So I ended up in an actual drying out clinic for a week. I went in there, I mean, I know this sounds odd, but I had a really good time.
In the clinic?
Yeah, this was
what
stories
was going on in
there.
There.
Oh, it was madness, but it was a real learning curve. We made the best out of a bad situation, I suppose. But on the seventh day when I was leaving, I really thought I wasn't going to drink. And, you know, I found myself 2 hours later as if I was watching myself drive round to the off licence and get vodka.
Gosh.
It was so weird. But then I've spoken to other people and it's as if it's a force that it just takes over you. I don't know. It's so strong and it's hard for me to understand now. And I've been there.
Yeah.
So it's even harder for anyone who doesn't experience to understand. It's so hard for other people to be judgmental, and because they can't understand.
It is for a lot of people self-medicating as well.
That's it. I was self-medicating, you know, for sleep. In 2011, my little boy was born and he had a birth defect, and it was all quite traumatic that first year of his life. It was operation upon operation, and, you know, I had to leave him in the hospital because you weren't allowed to stay in neonatal, and it was hard, so I'd drink to sleep. So that,
right,
I could get back to the hospital the next day. So I started with the medicating there, really.
Yeah.
Although I did drink too much before. The only times I ever didn't drink from when I was 14 was when I was pregnant with my two boys.
Yeah.
They were the only times I did. Other than that, I just was always drinking, really.
Wow. And it does stem from that drink culture in England as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So tell us about when you, if we fast forward to when it was literally a life or death situation. I got the phone call from mum that you'd had another seizure and that you were basically on life support, and that the doctors had told her it was 50-50.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to talk about this because it's very emotional.
I had multiple organ failure. My liver went and my kidney was going, and it was kind of 50, well, yeah, I don't remember any of it. I was hallucinating. I was in intensive care for a week, and I thought I'd been kidnapped and I was in the back of Asda being experimented on by aliens. So, Asda's a superstore.
Yeah, so Asda would be like Ralph's over here, I would say. So it's like basically you thought you were in the back of Ralph's you were being experimented on.
Yeah.
So your mind had just gone.
Yeah, and I was in and out. I think I was in and out of consciousness. I can't really remember. But then there came a point where I knew I was going to... This is really strange. It's hard to explain, but I knew I was going to die, but it wasn't... I was going to die. It was just, you can go to sleep now. And I was that exhausted that it was very tempting. In fact, I very nearly did. And then this panic just gripped me because my two sons, one had just started high school. This was the November. Tom had started high school in the September, and my youngest Stanley had started his primary school. And I just got panic and thought, hang on a minute, I can't go to sleep. I need to be able to do their packed lunch properly. Their dad won't do it as good as me. And trivial matters, God, you know. And I panicked and I thought, okay, what can I do? What can I do? And into my head popped what the mind believes the body can achieve. So I thought, okay, yeah. So on that basis, what am I going to do? And I thought, I'm going to pretend I'm okay and I'm going to be okay. And so with that, I came round, and Becky, my intensive care nurse, who had been asking me every time I regained consciousness all week, had been saying, hi Sarah, my name's Becky, do you know where you are? And I'd think, I know where you're going to tell me I am, but I don't believe you, I'm in the back of Asda. And she'd say, you're in Arrow Park Hospital intensive care unit and you're very poorly. And I'd think, okay, whatever.
You thought she was lying.
I thought she was lying. So this one, after this...
Just let's say that again because it's so powerful.
Yeah.
What the mind believes the body will achieve.
Yeah.
And you clearly, this came through very strongly.
So I regained consciousness then, and she's probably expecting me to say I didn't know where I was again. And I said, yeah, I'm in Arrow Park intensive care unit. And she looked very shocked. And she said, right, okay. And she said, okay. I said, could you pass me my, have I got any makeup?
Wow.
Because I thought, there was another thing that I kept thinking, you get dressed and you show up. That was something I used to say to myself when I was really ill. I'd always put my makeup on regardless and try and look like I was okay.
Right.
But I thought, I was just on full mission to pretend I was okay. So I thought, right, get me makeup on. So she thought I'd lost the plot. She thought, but she got it and she was made up. And then the next day I was out of intensive care and onto high dependency. And then the day after I was up on a ward, and anyone who asked me if I was okay, I'd tell them that I was absolutely fine.
Wow.
Which people clearly probably did think that I wasn't all there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, because you weren't fine at the time.
No.
But what I find interesting is that you said the different attitudes to the people on the same ward.
Yeah, there was
a
girl who I became friendly in a hospital with. She was in the next bed. I was on the alcoholic ward, and so she was a fellow alcoholic. And I was in a far worse way than her, actually, at the time. So she kind of took me under her wing. But people would ask, it wasn't that she was really negative or anything, but she wasn't doing what I was doing, as in people would say, are you okay? And she'd say, oh, you know, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm all right. I've been better. Whereas I was, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Mum thought, oh dear, she's deluding herself again. But I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't explain it because it just sounded bonkers, you know.
Yeah.
So Louise, I left her. She was in there another 2 or 3 weeks. We were both warned while we were in there, if we drink again, we'd be dead. And unfortunately, Louise did, and she is dead.
Oh,
she was found
sad.
Dead in her flat. So that was really, really sad.
Oh, that is
so
sad.
Because she was so lovely, but she just didn't do it.
No, No, and so few do. And this is why I want you to share like how you've done it, because now 3 years on, you haven't touched a drop of alcohol and have no intention of ever touching a drop of alcohol. No,
which is something that you're not supposed to say. You know, you're supposed to say for today. Well, I kind of have my own rules. I don't say that. I'm quite confident in saying that I won't. People say, oh, is it a struggle? No, it's not a struggle. And why is it not a struggle? Because I'm saying it's not.
Yeah.
You know, if I was to sit here and say, oh, it's an awful struggle, you know, it's everywhere in England, and I could make up a million excuses as to why it's a struggle, and then it would be a struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But from day, it is not a struggle. I thoroughly enjoy it being sober, and I wish I'd have done it so much earlier. I didn't realise how it was holding me back all these years. And so I am actually blessed that that happened, as mad as it sounds. But I won't have that it's a struggle. I'll say, you know, you can have your challenges, but that's all they are. They're just little tests.
Yeah. And your life in comparison to how it was now.
Oh my God, that was a living hell. So how can I say that this is a struggle compared to that?
Yeah.
What I was going through and what I was putting everyone through, the devastation it was creating, that is living hell.
Yeah.
You know, this is great. There's no comparison.
And if you think about even before it got really bad, when you were just, you know, drinking of an evening,
yeah,
and how your life was then, yeah, compared to how it is now.
This is contentment. This is just I just get excited about life and learning things and all the things that we're into, like the spiritual path. It's just amazing compared to what life was like before. There's no contest.
No.
But never would I have believed it
if somebody had told you at the time.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. I really didn't. You know, no. I spoke to somebody who'd been in recovery for, I think it was like 15 years. And this is when I was bad and I knew I was bad and I was trying to get out of it and I couldn't. And he said to me, I'm so content. And I just thought, I believed him because he wasn't lying, I could tell, but I couldn't imagine how you could be content if you could never drink again, and how he was all right with that. I couldn't imagine it, you know. I knew I needed to stop drinking, but what I really was thinking was I need to stop drinking so much. I never thought I'd completely stop.
Yeah.
Wow. But I'm so glad I have, you know, and I just wish it for everyone. I really, really do, because put it this way, I'm yet to meet the few people that I know that are in recovery. I'm yet to meet one that regrets it.
Yeah.
Every single person that I know that's in active recovery is loving it.
Yeah.
So
you are so much happier. Like, yeah, you know, it is an absolute joy, like, being with you. You make me laugh. Even when I am in, like, the foulest of moods, you'll always make me laugh. And laughter really is the best medicine,
yes,
as well. We've,
yeah,
always believed that.
Yeah.
But just with regards to the spirituality, obviously we learned Reiki. And so people might say, you know, oh, well, the Reiki didn't really help you, did it? Because then all that happened afterwards. But you believe differently, don't you?
Well, yeah, but I do, yeah. I mean, there's the healing crisis. Now, mine was a bit extreme, you know, but...
So yeah, the healing crisis, just to inform anyone who's not familiar with Reiki, is said when we learn Reiki energy healing that we work through our own issues on very deep levels. And sometimes this can, you know, make past traumas resurface, and we can have something called a healing crisis, where we really work through our issues. So usually we say that would last, you know, a couple of months after being attuned, but actually I believe it's ongoing when we're doing this kind of work.
Yeah.
And for you, I think it really was, it brought things to the surface, and you actually addressed things.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but all I know is it's all been for the greater good. It was hard to see at the time, but this was my path. But I mean, if I can help anyone who along the way, then that's even better, you know.
Absolutely. And you are part of a group as well, aren't you? Life
am,
is a gift.
Yeah, run by a wonderful lady called Babs. She started up our group when she lost her son very sadly through alcohol addiction. He'd actually been sober for 7 years and then he started again. And she lost him. So she is just amazing. She's my hero. and she puts all her energies and all her sadness and devastation into trying to help others. And I honestly believe it's her group is one of the main factors as to why I am sober now.
Wow.
Through the sheer fact of I watch, I don't mean I watch people, but I meet people and I get to know them and I see them and I've seen what happens, you know, and you learn by other people's mistakes and you learn through other people's successes also.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen people that I know and they're great people and they think they've been sober 3 years and they think they can drink again.
Yeah.
And it just reinforces it for me.
Yeah, that you'll never drink again.
That I can't drink
and
again.
Sarah, you do say that to me a lot and to other people. No, I'll never drink again. And that's something that they say you shouldn't say. But I'm with you in that you truly believe that and your word is
yeah,
your want. Like
yeah.
Your word is very powerful.
It is. It's
like
so powerful.
I think a lot of us don't realise how powerful our word is. Thoughts, words become things.
Yeah.
They really do. Everything is energy. And if you believe in the law of attraction, which we do, what we put out to the universe is rebounded back to us.
Yeah.
So therefore you saying, oh, people say it's a struggle, therefore
yeah.
It is a struggle.
Yeah. And just the whole way, and it applies to anything. If you say it's a struggle, then it's going to be a struggle. So just even if you have to pretend a bit at first, just say this is easy. This is easy, you know, and eventually it will become easy. And then you're actually meaning it when you're saying it, and it is easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not lying now when I'm saying it's easy.
Yeah.
I'm telling the truth now. I'll admit,
you're not pretending anymore.
I might have been pretending at first, but now it's true.
There you go.
Yeah.
So like but that's so true. And they say like with positive affirmations and things like that,
oh,
we keep repeating them.
And now meditation discovered thanks to Katie here. That was a year ago. I was struggling a little bit with something. And she said, you need to get on an insight timer.
Yes, insight timer.
Oh, well, yes, I did that. I'm a bit of an extremes person, you know, it's everything to the extreme. So, yeah, I haven't missed a day in a year now of meditation, but that's totally changed me as well. I just don't get wound up over anything now.
Yeah, it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
And I always say, if meditation was a pill, people would
yeah.
take it and do it.
Yeah.
But because it requires you to just take yourself off with no medication,
yeah.
just yourself and your thoughts and just like try and discipline your mind, people won't spend the time doing it.
That's it. And since doing this also, I take no medication actually as well. That's
wow.
another thing that's happened. I was
yes,
always
you're on
blood
pressure
pills and all sorts since an early age. All that's gone now as well. Don't need any of that.
That is amazing and honestly confirms for me the best medicine, and it can cure anything, meditation.
Well, yeah.
It really is, because it gives us our inner power back.
Yeah.
And we are so much more powerful than we ever know. It's like, so, you know, Reiki meditations have helped you, the power of positive thought.
Yeah.
And I guess like what you were doing was almost like positive affirmations. I'm fine. I'm
yeah,
fine. Even
was,
if
yeah.
you, at
yeah.
the time you felt like you weren't, you kept saying it. And
yeah.
then you programmed that into you and you healed quicker,
yeah,
much quicker.
Well, when I was in intensive care, my GGT level liver reading, it went off the scale at 1200. We think it was probably around about 1500. It's supposed to be around about 30.
Wow.
So anything over 1000 and you more or less are dicing with death, you should be dead.
Wow.
So I was then, once I was out of hospital, I had to go and have blood test every week at my GP, who was wonderful as well. And it kept falling and falling, and just 3 months later it was down to 25.
Wow.
From 1500. I had it done. And that was another thing, like, I'm supposed to get regular liver, get it checked regularly. But now this might sound blasé, considering that I did have liver failure, but I know I'm all right. So I really don't feel the urgency to do it,
yeah.
which the bloods nurse couldn't believe when I did eventually get round to doing it after about, I don't know, over a year. I was supposed to strictly go 6 months. And she was like, well, why are you here? And I said, well, because I had liver failure. Well, why haven't you been before? And I said, well, because I feel like I'm fine. And she said, well, I think, you know, and I thought, oh, well, we'll see, won't we? Well, anyway, it came back at 19.
Wow, it's dropped fine. Again. Yeah. My gosh, it's
but,
amazing.
Yeah, again, I don't, if you to, it's one of those, isn't it? If you start panicking, thinking, oh, I need, my liver's going to be shocking. Then yeah. Your liver is going to be shocking. I fully believe my liver is fine, and therefore it is.
Absolutely. And it is, if you believe something as well for long enough, that energy just accumulates and accumulates, and then it does become your reality.
Yeah.
You know, we create by default. We really do. We don't know that our thoughts are as powerful as they are.
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, I'll say now, it's very hard not to worry. You know, it shouldn't be hard not to worry.
Yeah.
But that, you know, worry really is a wasted energy.
It
and
is.
You're only affecting your own body.
Worry, guilt, all that, that's just all a waste of, it doesn't serve any purpose at all.
No. So if we just summarise your healing techniques that you have used, it is spirituality, meditation every day. And even if it's just like, what, maybe 10 minutes on Insight Timer, how often?
Oh, yeah, well, it depends on, I do want a suit. So if I've only got 2 minutes and I'm feeling a bit stressed out, I'll just do a 2 minute timeout. If I'm feeling a bit anxious over something, which is very rare, then I'll do, and I've got 10 minutes, I'll choose a 10 minute one for anxiety. There's no excuse not to do one. There's a time limit for anything, whatever one suits you, and there's a subject for whatever you're feeling at the time.
Yeah.
I do all different ones, but it tends to be positive affirmations more than anything, really.
And
so
this,
really feel them. And one other thing that has been huge for me that I think is gratitude, because after going through that and coming out the other side, I was literally grateful for everything.
Wow.
Genuinely grateful. And then the more grateful I was, the more I got given things to be grateful for, which is exactly how it works.
Yeah.
And there's always something to be grateful for. There was probably a lot of things that I could have been not grateful for, but I was just grateful.
Yeah.
You know, so, and since then, I went back to work 3 months later, got my new car, I call it my recovery car, not because of, you know, just because it was like a symbol, really,
wow,
of everything else that was going on.
Yeah.
Got all my friends and family back who had alienated while I was in such a dark place, spreading my negativity.
Oh.
Went on holiday, you know, all within a year, and it was, and just flying, really.
It is amazing. It is a truly miraculous story, and I'm so proud of you. I think honestly I'm like, yeah, my sister is an alcoholic, but she is 3 years sober and she is like spreading the light everywhere. I think everyone needs to know your story, and I'm sure everyone can relate to it in some way, because whether it's yourself or whether it's a family member or a friend, someone is affected by alcoholism.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it. It's that common.
And you need to also know that you nobody else can do it except for the individual. So Katie tried so hard. All my family did. And unfortunately, there was nothing any of them could have done. It had to come from me. So anyone who's suffering with a family member who is an alcoholic, you must realise that you have to take that pressure off yourself. You can be there to support, but there's nothing that you can do. It has to come from the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing, truly miraculous. I never thought I would see the day where you would be over here with me and we would be out just having fun and doing our meditations and things, which we love doing. So I am incredibly grateful.
Me too.
Yeah, and I just want to say, because Sarah, now 3 years sober, you've really been getting back into your healing work, haven't you? Doing the Reiki, and she's going to be doing her Reiki certifications this weekend in England, because she actually leaves today.
Yes.
Don't you?
Yes.
Which you're a bit sad
I'm
about.
I'm coming back very
soon.
She's
going to be back very soon. Yes, you are. So that I'm so excited about that as well, and I can't wait to see your journey with that. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. If you have any questions, where can people find you, Sarah? They can find you on Facebook.
Yes.
Just the look on Sarah. The look on Sarah's face when I said that, like she wasn't expecting it.
I don't know where you can find me.
Where can people find you? Can they follow you? Wait, you're on Instagram, aren't you?
Well, I am, yeah. Maybe I need to get back into Instagram.
You do? So what's your handle on Instagram?
The trouble was, I set it all up when I was half cut and I can never remember the passwords. So maybe I need to.
You need a new page, Sober Sarah page. All right, I'm going to keep you all posted on that, whether Sarah sets up a Sober Sarah page. But if you do have any questions for her, you can, of course, DM me and I can send you over to her. But thank you so much again.